In the comment section, Rita has given us one of the excuses that people give. They say, this is down to your own faith. It's your belief, but it doesn't relate to me. And this is a common excuse that people have. They say, spirituality, I don't follow spirituality and faith. I follow science and fact. I need experiments. I need evidence. I need empirical backup. I'm not a simple-hearted person who can just put faith in a book and then lead my life according to that. I need some hard evidence, and then I can put my heart into something. In the seventh chapter, Krishna reveals to Arjuna that this Bhagavad Gita is not a religion. This Bhagavad Gita is actually a spiritual science. And in the very first verse of the seventh chapter, entitled Knowledge of the Absolute, Krishna says to Arjuna, Maya Shaktamana Partha Yogam Yunjan Madashraya Yatha gyasasita chrunu ashamshayam mahabaho yatha gyasasita chrunu. Krishna says to Arjuna, now hear. If you hear closely, then you can know me in full, free from doubt. The Bhagavad Gita is a spiritual science that has no holes. H-O-L-E-S. This is the process of the Bhagavad Gita. H stands for hear. O stands for observe. L stands for live. E stands for experience. And S stands for share. When you hear the Bhagavad Gita, the second thing that happens is that you can look at the world, observe the world, and see how everything the Bhagavad Gita is saying tallies with reality. Once you've heard and you've observed, then the third thing you can do is live it. And when you live the words of the Bhagavad Gita and you apply the teachings in your day-to-day functioning, then E, you experience the Bhagavad Gita as a reality. You experience Krishna. And then when you experience Krishna, the natural result is S, you want to share that with as many people as possible. The Bhagavad Gita is not like a traditional religion. A religion begins with faith and it ends in faith because people don't always apply the teachings. The Bhagavad Gita begins with faith, but when we apply the teachings and we actually perform the spiritual experiment which Krishna is offering us in the pages of the Bhagavad Gita, then we end with an actual experience, an observation, an actual realization of the spiritual reality. And therefore, someone who says that they want science, we invite them to come and perform the most profound scientific experiment in the entire universe, which is the spiritual experiment to find your own self. The Bhagavad Gita is not any less scientific than the science that we see in the world. When you see science in the world, you may want to take a little closer look because it may not be as scientific as you think it to be. In science, there is still so much underlying faith, often in claims which are unsubstantiated. In science, there is often irrational stubbornness, even when evidence arises which contradicts modern scientific theory, that evidence is sidelined and put out of public view. In science, there is artificial hype, claims that we have discovered and understood and disseminated reality far beyond what we have actually done. And therefore, if you take a closer look, then you'll see that science is not actually as factual as you may think it is. And spirituality is not as faith-based as you may think it to be. But actually, when you apply the same level of scrutiny to science and spirituality, then you'll see that it's somewhat of a level playing field. And what Krishna does in the 7th chapter of the Gita is he brings together spirituality and science, and he uses a very interesting word. He says to Arjun, Asamsayam Mahabaho. O Arjun, you can know me, Asamsayam, free from any doubt whatsoever. So if you want to be a scientist, Krishna invites you to become a spiritual scientist and discover the most profound truths in the entire creation. In the comment section, Saroj Pishavadia has said, I am young. I have plenty of time to practice spirituality when I'm older and I have more time. Yes, this is an excuse. Monica Patel says, I'm too young. I'll read it when I'm older, when I have nothing more to do. This perhaps is something people always say. I'll do it in the future. I'll do it later on. I'm convinced. I don't have any excuses. I'm ready. I'm fully on board. I'm fully given to this, but I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it the week after. I'll do it in 2022. Krishna looks at us and says, as we look at Krishna and say, yes, Krishna, in the future, just now coming, Krishna looks at us and says, death is also just now coming. In the 8th chapter, Krishna reminds Arjun, Antakale chamameva smaran muktva kalevaram yaprayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra samsayaha. Antakale, time is coming to an end. The body is a ticking time bomb. At one point, we will have to leave this world. We don't think about it, but it's definitely going to happen. Did you know that 72% of people that die without writing a will? Maybe they didn't think it would happen. Maybe they didn't want to think that it would happen. Regardless, it happened. Because time and tide wait for no person. When it comes to spirituality, a young person says, I'm too young for this. An old person says, I'm too old for this. And everyone in between says, I'm too busy for this. Everyone says, yes, someday I will do it. There are 7 days in the week, my friends, and someday is not one of them. If you're telling me you're going to do it, can you give me a day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? Don't tell me someday. If your mentality is that I will do it tomorrow, then tomorrow your mentality will also be, I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow is a mystical land. It's a mystical land where 99% of human creativity, human achievement, human potential resides. The only problem is we never make it to that mystical land called tomorrow. And therefore, Krishna in the 8th chapter is reminding us, don't give the excuse that you'll do it in the future. Because if there's a good thing and you can do it now, why not do it now? What I would like to share with you today on this point is that spiritual success does not come overnight. Spiritual success does not drop from is not like an apple which drops from a tree and hits you mystically at one point in time. Spiritual success comes in installments. Every single day when you apply yourself to your spiritual practices, you receive the spiritual success of that day. And the day after, you receive the spiritual success of that day. And the day that you procrastinate, and the day you say, not today, tomorrow, that's the day when you miss out on that installment of spiritual success. So don't miss out on spiritual success. It's available every single day. And that day can begin today. And that day can continue on to tomorrow. And it has to become every single day for the rest of our lives. Because what Krishna explains in the Gita, Ya prayati samadbhavam, yati nastyatra samsayaha. Whatever you remember at the time of death, that is where you will go. And what you remember at the time of death will be determined by what you did every single day of this life. And so, don't put it off to the future. That is not a very, very good excuse. Now is the time, and Krishna is inviting us. He's warning us. And he's also bringing up the reality that it doesn't matter whether you're the king, the queen, or the pawn. At the end of the chess game, every single piece ends up in the box. And that is the reality of the world we're living in. And so, let us seize the day and take spirituality while it's available. Someone once came to me and said, I don't want to follow organized religion. Of course, I told them, we're very disorganized, so you'll love us. Of course, that wasn't convincing to them. He said, no, I don't like following rules and regulations. I don't like following systems. I don't like following the herd. I don't like to count what I do. I don't chant on beads and put a number on it. I like to do everything from my heart. For me, structure, systems, and all this organization is material. For me, spirituality is an affair of the heart, and I do it my way. I don't have to follow anyone else's way. So this is a very, very common excuse that people have. And interestingly, Krishna agrees with you that spirituality must come from the heart. Yes, the heart is the essence. Love is the essence. And in the 9th chapter of the Gita, Krishna reminds Arjuna, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti uparitam ashnami prayatat manaha. Krishna says, Arjuna, I don't require much from you. You can give a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, no problem at all. All I'm looking for is the love, the devotion, and the sincere sentiment that you give it with. However, Krishna says in the very next verse of the 9th chapter, Yad karoshi yadashnashi yajjuhoshi dadasiyat yattapasyasikonteya tatkurushva madarpanam. Krishna says, regulate whatever you do and do it as an offering to me. So if you're eating, make sure you offer it. If you're offering charity, then offer it in a spiritual way. If you're bowing down, then do it in a spiritual offering. In other words, in this verse, Krishna says that we should follow a regime, a system, a systemized way of dovetailing everything in our life in spirituality. Yes, spirituality is about the heart. But in order to awaken that very natural devotion, we have to go through a process. If someone said, I want to express my heart through music, but they never learned notes, they never learned keys, how much will they be able to express? If someone says, I want to express my heart through writing, but that person never took the time to learn spelling and grammar, how much will they be able to express their heart through writing? And if someone says, I want to express my heart through spirituality, but they never took the time to do sadhana or spiritual practice or regulated acts of devotion, how much spirituality will actually awaken? And so, while Krishna agrees that spirituality is something that comes from the heart, he also reminds us that we must follow a system, because systems allow us to overcome ignorance, to overcome imperfection, to overcome inner blocks within our consciousness. And once we've overcome those things, the natural flow of devotion can fully manifest unimpeded. And so, in the spiritual practice, the beginning is sadhana, which means daily acts of devotion. This will mature into bhava, which means genuine awakening of spiritual emotion. And this then matures into prema, which is pure love for Krishna. But it all begins with sadhana. And therefore, we must follow a regulated spiritual practice, just as we follow so many regulations within this material world, because it is that regulation which will ultimately lead to complete freedom. Someone once came to me and said, I've been praying to God for many, many years, but God never came to me. I never saw God. I never experienced God. I never felt close to God. And therefore, because I've never experienced or seen God, how can you expect me to go on this spiritual journey? How can you expect me to dedicate my life to the Bhagavad Gita when I don't see Krishna in my life? This is perhaps one of the most common excuses that we come across, one of the most common reasons that people give for not practicing spirituality. In the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is actually demonstrating how he is fully available for anyone who wants to perceive his existence. In one beautiful verse, he says, Yad yad vibhutimat sattvam shrimad urjitamevava tattadeva vagachatvam mamatejom sasambhavam. Krishna says, when you look out of the window and see all beautiful, wondrous, breathtaking creations, then you should understand that all of that comes from but one spark of my splendor. Krishna explains, Rasoham apsukonteya prabhashmi shashishuryayo pranava sarvavedeshu shabdhake paurusham rishu. Krishna says, I'm the taste in water. I'm the light of the sun and the moon. I am the sound in ether. I am the syllable in om. And I am the ability in every single person. Is there a day when you don't drink water? Is there a day that goes by when you don't have at least one moment of silence? Is there a day when you don't see the light of the sun and the moon? Krishna is fully available. But the question is, are we awake, alert, and attentive to see Krishna? Once there was a very, very famous violinist named Joshua Bell. Joshua Bell was an award-winning violinist. He would perform at venues where thousands of people would come, and the ticket to enter his concert was no less than $100. Joshua Bell's violin itself was estimated to cost $3 million. This is Joshua Bell, one of the most famous violinists in the entire world. That Joshua Bell once went to an American subway station and began busking with his $3 million violin in the underground station. At rush hour, all of those people were rushing by, and in 1 hour, only three people stopped to watch him. And in that 1 hour, he collected donations which did not exceed $30. This is the same Joshua Bell who two nights before had played in a sellout concert with thousands of people who had paid $100 to see him. When we are busy, when our mind is preoccupied with many other things, when there is noise around us, we may not perceive the value that is right in front of our eyes. Just like all these busy commuters, many of whom may even have attended that concert, just as they were so preoccupied that they never saw Joshua Bell in the subway station. We may be so preoccupied in our life, so busy, so bombarded with many, many different thoughts, that even though Krishna is fully available, we're not able to see or perceive his existence. We don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. And therefore, if we actually want to perceive Krishna, if we want to see Krishna, if we want to experience Krishna, then he's fully available. However, it requires that we open our minds, we open our hearts, and we open our eyes to see him. And when we do that willingly, then we can actually see. It's not a question of not seeing Krishna. Krishna is actually everywhere, all around me, acting, arranging, and fully involved in our life on a moment-to-moment basis. So Krishna consciousness and the Bhagavad Gita is not meant to just help you believe in God. It's a book which is meant to train you to perceive God's presence at every moment in our life. And that is the offer. So if someone says, I haven't seen Krishna, I haven't experienced Krishna, we have to go back to them and ask them, have you opened your mind? Have you opened your heart? Have you opened your eyes? Because Krishna is not a distant God. Krishna is a very close God, and a close God who is very, very active. We all experience that life is full of many, many problems, and this is often one of the reasons that we give for not taking up spirituality fully. We say, I have too many problems. I have financial problems, I have family problems, I have career problems, I have relationship problems, I have problems, and more problems. And in the midst of all of these problems, how can you expect me to take up spirituality in a concentrated way? Well, we may want to think for one moment how many problems Arjun encountered in his life. When he was young, he was poisoned. He lost his father. He was stripped of the kingdom. So many injustices were committed against him. So many attacks. So much abuse. And then Arjun came to the point where he had come to perhaps the greatest problem of his life. Now he was on a battlefield, faced with all his relatives, all his teachers, and so many other illustrious personalities who he would now have to contend with in a trial of arms. Arjun had a lot of problems. And Krishna knew that Arjun had many problems. And in the 11th chapter, Krishna wanted to allay all of Arjun's concerns. And therefore, Krishna showed a form which was unimaginable, a form which was so effulgent, a form called the universal form, the Vishvarupam, in which the entirety of creation, all the planets, all the species, all the demigods, all the living entities, a form in which past, present, and future was all predicted. And importantly for us, a form in which Krishna showed to Arjun that all of his enemies had already been killed, even though the battle had not even started. Therefore, Krishna, in a wonderful verse to Arjun, says, Tasmatvam utishtaya sholabhashva jitva shatrun bhungshva rajam samriddham maye vaitani hatapurvameva nimita matram bhavasavya sachin. Krishna says, look, Arjun, all of your enemies, all of the obstacles have already been killed by my grace, and therefore, nimita matram bhavasavya sachin, all you have to do, Arjun, is now become my instrument. This is amazing. Problems appear in our life. We learn from them. We grow from them. And then Krishna ultimately takes away each one of those problems. Problems are not meant to be an obstacle to our spirituality. The temporary appearance of problems come in order to help us to intensify our spirituality. Some people look up at God and say, God, take away all of my problems. What we don't understand is that God is looking down at us saying, but I sent all of those problems so that you can change yourself. The problem is not the problem. The problem is our reaction to the problem. There were two boys who had an alcoholic father. One of them turned out to be an alcoholic, and another one turned out in his life never to drink one drop of alcohol. This was fascinating. So they went and asked the alcoholic son, why did you become an alcoholic? His answer, I watched my alcoholic father. They went to the other son, who never drank one drop of alcohol in his whole life, and asked him, why did you abstain from alcohol for your whole life? His answer, I watched my father who was an alcoholic. They both saw the same thing. They both experienced the same thing. They both went through the same thing. But the result was very, very different because their reaction was very, very different. In the 11th chapter, Krishna is saying these obstacles and problems, just see them as a stepping stone to your success. Some people see problems in opportunities, but other people see opportunities in problems. And therefore, if you're in this spiritual mindset, then you'll see that there is nothing which is disturbing or impeding your spiritual journey. You simply have to learn how to react. And Krishna says, I am there. I am there to help. And Krishna shows, I've resolved everything. Simply now, nimitta matram bhavasavyasachin. Now just become an instrument and act in my plan. And in this way, the excuse that I have too many obstacles and problems is not a very good excuse, because Krishna knows. Krishna has sent those, and Krishna will give you the power to overcome those, and Krishna will give you the intelligence to use those in such a way that you grow as a person and grow in your spirituality. We may well have the fear that when we take up to spiritual life, we will lose many, many friends in the process. Our friends may look at us and say, you've changed, you're different, you're not the same person I knew before. And all of these people who we spent so much time with, who we exchanged so many loving experiences with, we're afraid that we will lose many, many friends. This is one of the reservations that one may have as they embark on the spiritual journey. In the 12th chapter of the Gita, Krishna explains in a very, very beautiful verse, Adveshta sarvabhutana maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahankara samadukha sukhakshami. Krishna says that as you take up spiritual life, something amazing happens. Your entire character becomes upgraded. Krishna says when you take up to spiritual life, Adveshta sarvabhutanam, you no longer have any envy towards others. Karuna, you become very, very compassionate. Nirmamo, you have no longer any greediness or sense of proprietorship. Nirahankara, you have no ego, pride, arrogance or vanity. Sukha, dukha, samak, shami, you are equal in all situations, peaceful, happiness or distress. And then Krishna says, by having such qualities, maitra, you become a kind friend to all living entities. What Krishna explains is that far from losing friends, you will actually find real friends when you take up spiritual life. There are different types of friends in this world, and you could compare it to a tree. On a tree, there are leaves. Leaves come and go, they change with the winds, they come and leave with the seasons. Some friends are like leaves. They're in our life for some time. They seem very beautiful connection, but then the next moment they're gone. Some friends are like branches, they're stronger, they stay for longer, and you feel as though you can rely on them. But then at some point, they may also snap. Or a branch is hollow. And on the external, that friendship feels very powerful. But when we look a little bit deeper, we see that the internal substance of that friendship is lacking. And some friendships are like the trunk, which stay for the entirety of the lifetime of that tree. And that trunk, often overlooked, those friends overlooked are actually our real friends. Krishna explains that when we take up spiritual life, we shouldn't be afraid that we will lose friends, but rather by developing wonderful character, by developing purity in our own personality, we will actually find real friends, true friends, and we will increase in our capacity to be a good friend to others. What's more, when you take up spiritual life, you actually are introduced to the best friend of all, because you make Krishna your friend. And Krishna says in the final verse of chapter number 12, Yetu dharma mritam idam yathoktam paryupashate tesham shraddha dhanamat parama bhaktaste tivame priyaha. When one comes and takes up this spiritual life with their heart, completely applying themselves, Krishna says, bhaktaste tivame priya, I become the greatest friend to that devotee. I become very, very dear to that devotee, and they become very, very dear to me. Krishna says, that devotee, madanyatena jananti naham tebyo managapi, I don't know anything about anything but that devotee, and that devotee doesn't know anything but me. This very beautiful friendship with Krishna is established. So we should not worry that you may lose your friends. Rather, see that when you take up spiritual life, you'll upgrade your character. You'll become a better friend. You'll attract the best friends. And ultimately, you'll become connected to the eternal friend, the smiling boy who plays a flute and runs in the pasturing grounds of the holy land of Vrindavan, who's smiling and who's standing in a threefold bending form, that greatest of enchanting personalities, Krishna, will become your best friend.